It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
This is hit well into center field. That one's carrying out at center. It's out of here. Ohtani with a pinch hit home run. At the plate is Mike Trout. The pitch on its way. It's blasted out to dead center field. Out of here. Ball gets away. He's going to break for the plate. Ball game is over. The Angels with a walk-off win here in the bottom of the ninth inning.
This is the Angels Recap Podcast, a review of the past week in Angels baseball. Here's your host, Trent Rush.
Hey, what's going on? Hello and welcome to the Angels Recap Podcast. My name is Trent Rush. Excited to be with you here as the Ohtani Mania in Denver is finally come to a conclusion. We got a couple days for this Angels team to rest, Shohei in particular, before the Halos get back to business coming up on Friday. Until then, my goodness, is there a lot to get to here on the podcast today. Of course, we're going to talk about what went down in Denver, all the cool stuff at the All-Star game, the what I thought was just a great showing from Shohei Ohtani and Jared Walsh. I know that they each went 0 for 2, but I thought for those guys, a really good showing. And once again, we got to see Angels be their first-class selves in on the biggest stage, which Mike Trout has owned for so many years. But when you talk about just first-class people, Shohei Ohtani and Jared Walsh fit that mold in such a significant way, and we got a chance to see that. So we'll talk about the All-Star game, certainly. And the MLB draft was going on the same time, basically. So I know that maybe the casual fan isn't paying all that close of attention to what's going on draft time. Look, the Major League Baseball draft is not the same as like the NFL or the NBA draft, but it is significant. And for the Angels, how about this note? 20 for 20 in drafting pitchers. I know on social media they were calling it a no-hitter, which I found pretty funny. But for the Angels to have 20 draft picks, all of them spent on arms, I think tells you a little something about what this organization is focused on and focused on improving. 19 of those arms are college arms as well. So when you think about it, you know, you go and draft a college player, they're going to be closer to big league ready than a high school player would be. A lot of times in high school, you're drafting upside and potential. A lot of times when you take college guys, you're taking guys that are going to be closer to the major league level. Again, that's not always the rule there, but just generally speaking, that sometimes is the thought. And Sam Bachman, the Angels' number one pick, is somebody that I know that a lot of people are excited about his potential to maybe even be a part of the big league staff at some point here in the 2021 season. I don't think that that is far-fetched. I don't know that that would be necessarily what's going to happen, but I don't think that that is impossible to have happen. And we're going to hear from him a little bit later on. I had a chance to ask him a couple of questions, and we checked in with Kai Bush as well, big 6'6 left-hander out of St. Mary's that the Angels were able to draft in the second round. So Bachman in the first round out of Miami, Ohio, and then Kai Bush, a second rounder out of St. Mary's, the big 6'6 lefty in the second round. And boy, after that, the Angels got some big name players as well, brought in a really good pitcher from LSU in the third round. So we're going to check in with Angels scouting director Matt Swanson coming up later on in this podcast. Hey, look, I tell you this, to get the scouting director of the club the day after the MLB draft is a big deal, and we are really excited to have Matt Swanson on, so we'll get a chance to hear from him in just a bit. But first, we got to talk about the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby. We'll start with the Derby on Monday. It was so much fun, I thought, just watching Shohei Ohtani and Juan Soto go to battle. I would say this, I just wish Ohtani could have that first minute back in the Home Run Derby. He ends up hitting 28. It goes to a swing off. Juan Soto ends up being being the winner there. But, man, you would have just loved to have seen Shohei have that one more, get that minute back, because, man, the damage he was doing and the pace he was on, like in that third minute, man, he was just crushing him. He ends up hitting six over 500 feet. Are you kidding me? That's a Shohei we all wanted to see. And it was cool to hear Shohei after the All-Star game talk about being like, hey, I'd be happy to come back to the Home Run Derby. You got to imagine that there are some folks in New York in the league office pretty excited that Shohei Ohtani would want to come back in the Home Run Derby, because he was the main attraction really all week, and it was just really fun watching him embrace that. You know, I couldn't help but laugh. He goes on MLB Network, and they asked him if he was nervous, and he goes, well, I'm not so much nervous for the game, but I'm kind of nervous talking to you guys because I see you on TV all the time. The humility of Shohei is radiant. His smile, his joy for baseball is infectious. You cannot help but love watching Shohei Ohtani. I'm telling you, I watch this guy and I can't help but smile, and he reaffirms my love and my passion for the game of baseball. And I know I'm not alone in that. I know a lot of other people feel the same way about Shohei Ohtani that have loved this game for so long, and he is attracting people that might not necessarily have been baseball fans. He is hitting a much wider audience, casting a much wider net of fans for this game. He is so good for baseball, and people watch this guy and they cannot help but love him. He's got such a great personality, and I just love how expressive he is. And of course, you know, getting a chance to see him every day is a real treat here with the Angels. But when the whole country gets to watch him, I just thought it was really cool. I mean, Ohtani, he didn't have to win the Home Run Derby. If anything, maybe it was better for him that he got to rest after that, because it was pretty obvious that was taxing on him. That's a hard thing to do in that Home Run Derby. And you give credit to Pete Alonso for winning back-to-back Home Run Derbies. That's a guy that is built for the Derby. No hard feelings losing to Juan Soto. Hey, you go 3-for-3 in a swing-off. Tip of the cap. Good for you. It was fun watching that. I just thought that was just an epic battle, watching Soto and Ohtani in that first round. I am not a guy that typically will watch the Home Run Derby. If I'm going to be totally honest, the Home Run Derby for me is not necessarily something that's really piquing my interest. I mean, I try to watch 162 baseball games over the course of the season. You get to the All-Star break, and then it comes time to, you know, sometimes maybe take a night off from watching baseball when you're in it all the time. This was one of those. It was appointment TV. You had to see Shohei Ohtani perform. I got together with friends and we made an event of it to watch Shohei Ohtani. It was that big of a deal to be able to see him, and the way he carried himself and the way he performed, I thought was outstanding. I won't lie, I got nervous watching that first minute, but it just took me back to the big picture of Shohei Ohtani and remembering seeing him in the spring of 2018 when, I mean, he couldn't hit anything in that spring training, and the pitching was a disaster that spring, only to get into the first week of the season and in the first homestand homer in three straight games, and then take a perfect game into the seventh inning. Then it's like, oh yeah, Shohei, that's the hype, that's it. And we're starting to see all of that come to fruition on a more consistent basis. But the Home Run Derby was an outstanding event. It was great to see Shohei perform the way that he did, even though he didn't win. Hitting those six home runs over 500 feet was just spectacular, and he ends up still hitting 28 home runs. That despite hitting, what, two in the first minute? So very, very cool, and it was just seeing him on the red carpet and doing the interviews and everything that he was doing, he just brought joy to baseball. And that you cannot help but love, and that is what's going to attract so many people. So no matter what naysayers are out there saying whatever they would like about Ohtani and maybe not being good for the game, if that is your thought, I think you need to reassess and maybe spend some time watching the game of baseball and watching Shohei Ohtani, because everybody that watched Shohei couldn't help but love him. Except for I did see that there were some fans that are haters out there that were, you know, maybe fans of another team in this market. And I just thought that was fun too, because that is, to me, a sign of greatness. When you start getting other people say, hold on, wait a minute, I'm not in on this guy. That, to me, is a sign, okay, now here you go. You start attracting that. That's a good thing to me, seeing some of that. So I'm encouraged by Shohei Ohtani, I'm encouraged for baseball because of Shohei Ohtani, I guess is a better way to put that. And I just thought his performance in the Home Run Derby was probably what's going to be my biggest takeaway. Of course, in the All-Star game, he ends up making history, becoming the first player to get a win and bat leadoff, not just in an All-Star game, not in a regular season game, not in a postseason game, the first time ever. That's never happened before. As Shohei makes history, gets the win, runs it up to 100 with the fastball. We haven't seen that in over a month. Ohtani's saying afterwards, hey, I wasn't trying to conserve for later. I was just trying to bring my best, and he did. Gets Fernando Tatis Jr. to lead things off. Max Muncy, Nolan Arenado, who, even though he's a Cardinal, the Colorado faithful absolutely love Arenado still. Ohtani sits him down in order in the first inning, en route to picking up the pitching win. How cool was that for Shohei Ohtani? I know he goes 0-for-2 at the plate, and you could tell he was a little, especially his second at-bat, he was a little bit out in front of it. He was excited, okay? He was excited. He wanted to be on that stage, and I thought he performed great. And then how about Jared Walsh? He gets put in left field, and he goes and makes a sliding catch, and I loved what he said afterwards. He was joking around, saying, hey, I just hope Joe Maddon wasn't watching because I like playing first base a whole lot more than left field. It was just cool. It was just cool hearing that from Jared Walsh, that he's able to let his personality shine on that stage. Anybody that's gotten a chance to talk to Jared, or maybe has listened to this podcast and has heard Jared on the podcast before, just knows how much fun it is talking with him, and his confidence and his passion for baseball and his love. And, you know, there's a lot being made of, like, remember in 2019 when he milked the cow? I'll just tell this story because I remember him doing that, and that is something like, okay, you go, and there are certain responsibilities as a rookie that are just part of your job in the baseball clubhouse. You're not going to send Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani out to go milk the cow. You usually send a player that maybe isn't going to play that night, or somebody that is a rookie, to go do something like that. It's almost kind of like a rite of passage in some ways. But that's part of the deal. It's not that nobody wants to do it. It's fun to be a part of that kind of stuff, but a lot of times veteran players had their routine, and maybe they've done stuff like that in the past, and now it's time for the rookies to step up and do that. Well, Jared Walsh goes and milks the cow. I don't remember what he did in the game that night. I think he played, though. And then the next day, I mean, remember, this is 2019, so Jared Walsh is just a 39th round pick that you're thinking, oh, good for him. Cool story that he made it to the big leagues. Great. You never know if he's going to stick or not. Maybe this is the last you see of Jared Walsh. He's got pretty good AAA numbers, but you don't know what he's going to be, and he wasn't really hitting at the time. Again, he was just getting his feet wet in Major League Baseball. So the next day, I remember I was with him at a library visit, at Anaheim Library, and we were doing, you know, meeting with kids at 9 in the morning. Now, Jared was so good. He was great with the kids and reading the books and talking to them and answering their questions, and he was really embracing it. I mean, he was phenomenal that day. And that always stuck with me because as much as players love doing things like this, love going to school visits and love going to library visits and interacting with fans, I'm telling you, players love this stuff. But to do it at 9 o'clock in the morning after a night game, probably less than ideal, okay? But Jared milks the cow, plays in the game. I'm pretty sure he played in the game. I want to double check that. But the next day, goes to the library visit and was great. And not just took it in stride, he embraced it. And I remember telling him that day, I'm like, hey Jared, you're being a great teammate for doing this. And he's like, hey, I like this. He's good for it. And he knew that, hey, when you're a rookie, that kind of comes with the territory. He's a 39th round pick. He's not all-star Jared Walsh at the time. He's just a guy that's happy to be in the big leagues. And he took that on, and that spoke volumes to me about the kind of person he is and the character that he has and the way he represents this organization. You gotta love Jared Walsh for all of those things. And then, not to mention the fact that the dude can mash. I mean, what he's doing at the plate right now is outstanding. The way he's patrolling first base is outstanding. You gotta love what we've seen from Jared Walsh. And then he goes and makes a sliding catch in left field too. And he's like worried about, hey, I don't want to be too good in left because I want to play first base. Don't worry, Jared. I don't think you're going anywhere over at first base. Halos need you over there. And he does so much for the Angels defensively. We've gotten into this on the podcast before. We've talked about it on the radio show that what Jared's able to do because of his athleticism, the Angels can be so aggressive in their shifting. And they can move him. You know, he's basically setting up in between first and second base. There are times where Jared is as close to second as he is to first on shifts. And the Angels can be more aggressive with that because Jared is so athletic that he can get to a ball and, you know, a hard hit ground ball over the left side. I mean, you're in a full sprint to get back to first base before the batter, and Jared can do it. Not many first basemen can do that. So I don't really care what the metrics or the numbers say. I think they're pretty good for Walsh. I really don't know because I think that a lot of fielding metrics are very flawed. But the way that Jared plays first base allows others to have success and allows the Angels to play great team defense. Certainly much better team defense. And I don't think it's a surprise that since, you know, really middle of May, the Angels have been a much, much better defensive team. I don't think that that's a shock to anybody, and I think that Jared Walsh is a huge reason for that. Halos got out of the gate slow as a defensive team. They had a lot of defensive issues early on that were hard to explain. Now we are seeing this team play the kind of defense we all expected at the beginning of the season. But I really think that Walsh being able to be you know, as athletic as he is, and for the Angels to be as aggressive with their shifting because of Walsh's athleticism, I can't help but think that that plays a big role in that. So it was cool seeing Jared Walsh on that stage and having so much success. One of my favorite rookies ever for, you know, the other stuff. It's not just what you do on the field. It's the other stuff that comes with being a big leaguer. And Jared Walsh embraced it and thrived in that role. And now here he is. You could say Walshy living his best life in the All-Star game. I didn't get a hit in the game, but it was just fun. It was fun. It was a great showing, I thought, for both Shohei and for Jared Walsh. The only thing the game was missing was Mike Trout, and I guess the Angels can say that too. Again, really, since about the middle of May, and you're hoping to get Trouty back before the end of July. I know that there's not a timetable set on that. We'll see when he ends up going on a rehab assignment for how he's going to get back into the fold for the Angels. He's eligible to return on the 17th. I don't see that happening, but you don't want to necessarily put timelines on things in particular. So that's just something to keep in mind with Mike Trout. You want to get him back. You want to get you know, Justin Upton back. You want to get Anthony Rendon back. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. There have only been four games this year when the Angels have essentially had their core eight position players. That's with Max Stassi behind the plate, Jared Walsh at first, Fletcher's your second baseman, Jose Iglesias at shortstop, Anthony Rendon at third, Upton in left, and Trout in center. Okay, I'm not even including Dex Fowler in right field. I'm just talking about the core eight because he got hurt so early. That core eight has played four games together. Angels are 3-1 in those games. That gives me a lot of confidence moving forward. I know this team can hit. And then we've gotten to see other guys emerge, like Phil Gosselin, who's been so good in a utility role, has been all over the place for the Angels. And other guys have gotten to step up too. But I can't help but think when the Angels get their full complement of players, how good this offense can be. I really think it's a top three offensive team in baseball with the full group. Maybe even best in baseball. I'm serious. When you get everybody clicking. Because Ohtani is exceeding expectations. If Trout is Trout, and then if Rendon can get back to what he was in 2019 with the Nationals, look out. You keep Upton hitting the way he was before he got hurt. With the way Stassi can swing the bat, Iglesias has been exactly who we thought he was going to be. You know, those are all really good things. And then, of course, Jared Walsh has come out of, I won't say come out of nowhere because we saw it in September last year, but Walsh has been phenomenal. He's been phenomenal. So there is so much to love. And then David Fletcher, let's not forget, David Fletcher is on, what, this 24-game hit streak? He's automatic right now. Fletch has been so good. And he carried the Angels in Seattle. I think Fletcher essentially lifted the Halos to a victory on that Sunday game. After taking 2-3 from the Red Sox, obviously you would have wanted to see the Angels be able to win that series in Seattle to wrap up the first half. But where they sit right now, 5.5 games out of a playoff spot, I really think there's a chance for this team to make some noise in the second half, not just because of the guys getting healthier and getting the full complement of players back, but I'm also seeing changes to the rotation that are speaking volumes to me. I really think that injecting Patrick Sandoval and Jose Suarez into the rotation is going to pay big-time dividends moving forward. I really think so. And I saw it in the series in Seattle. Angels went 1-1 in the last two games, but Sandoval dealt on Saturday, and I thought Suarez was really good on Sunday. Let's not forget, Suarez is a sub-2.5 ERA right now. I know he's only made two starts, but out of the bullpen, he was really good. And now here he comes in the rotation. So I know that there are some fans that maybe wrote off Jose Suarez when he was 22 years old, cutting his teeth at the big league level in 2019. I would say reserve judgment for this guy and allow him the time to develop. That's how the Angels are going to be able to pitch better. It's about drafting and developing. And the Angels have drafted a lot of really good pitchers over the years. And we're just now starting to see that development come through and make its way to the big league level. The Angels right now are in a place where it's not like these pitchers are all in rookie ball and low A. They have guys in high A and double A, and once you get to double A, then you can make that jump rather quick to the big league level. But you got to give them time. You can't rush guys through the system. So you only want them to be in the big leagues when they're ready. And now Suarez, to me, is looking ready. Patrick Sandoval, to me, is looking ready. You're getting these guys in the rotation, you're getting them in the fold, and all of a sudden, maybe now you don't have to go worry about signing guys on one-year deals in the offseason when you can develop internally and get those guys up, which allows you to have some of the financial flexibility to keep your megastars and also maybe go out and get something else. Maybe go get some reliever help. You got to be able to develop internally, and that's the whole key. And the Angels have taken, you know, you're seeing with one group of players, you're seeing the step two, right? They've been drafted, now the development part and how that's coming along. And then the Angels went, and in this draft class, took 20 pitchers. The number one pitcher, Sam Bachman, could be ready to go in 2021 in this major league staff, in the bullpen probably, but he projects as a starter long term. Bachman, really interesting arm to me. Kai Bush, really interesting arm to me. And it was really fun having a conversation with the Angels scouting director, Matt Swanson, about the draft. And here he is now talking about how the Angels selected players in 2021. All right, we're talking with Matt Swanson right now, the director of amateur scouting for the Angels. And a big day for you, Matt, getting done with this draft. 20 for 20 pitchers. Some folks calling it a no-hitter on social media, which is amusing. But in reality, for you guys to go out and take 20 pitchers, I think on the surface there would have to be some thought that this was an area you guys came in with a game plan wanting to address. Just in terms of an overall picture, how'd you feel about how it all played out? And was this really something that you were trying to accomplish going in?
Right, yeah. I think, you know, obviously I have precedent for taking a lot of pitchers previously. You know, and for me, you know, it can be an area of focus, not necessarily an area of need per se. But you know, I think when you look at where our system is at, you know, injecting as many pitchers as we're going to be able to into, you know, where our system is as far as like the position players that we have, you know, whether it's rookie ball all the way up to AAA, I think it just brings a good amount of balance to our system. So.
Yeah, I think people forget about the Jeremiah Jackson, Jordan Adams class where you followed that with 17 pitchers after that. I want to get some of your thoughts on Sam Bachman, your first-round pick, ninth overall. Comes out of Miami, Ohio. That's not exactly known as being, you know, a big power baseball program like you hear about in the SEC or Pac-12. What were some of your thoughts on Sam and what, you know, made him so appealing to you?
Yeah, Sam's awesome and just what an incredible pitcher and athlete and competitor, but more so like a person and his humbleness and just his just work ethic and his just care for his body and to the craft of pitching. Like it's a really special, unique package that it's just so hard to find. And you know, for Sam, like he's gonna have every opportunity to move as quickly as he wants to. And you know, it's a really exciting young arm to bring into the system. And, you know, when I was able to talk to him for the first time, you know, after selecting him a couple nights ago, you know, the thing he said, I couldn't track him down. And, you know, they had like a big party going on. He's like, I'm so tired. I was up at 6, started working out. Then I went through my bullpen. I mean, this is up at 6 a.m., you know, the morning of the draft, just already, you know, continuing to get ready for professional baseball. So, you know, just exciting. And it's just it's a fun one to bring into the system.
It was cool. We had a chance to talk with him on Zoom just the other day. And he was asked about, like, you know, the possibility of maybe he comes up as a part of the Angels, you know, pitching staff at some point in 2021. And he's like, yeah, I'm game. I'm up for it. When you hear a guy talk like that and you talk about the work ethic, like, how much does makeup value or factor into the decision? Like, obviously he's got good stuff, but how much do those intangibles play a role in making a pick like that?
It's the hardest thing to quantify. It is the hardest thing to find. And when you see it, it's just, it jumps out and hits you. And, you know, and for Sam, you know, to say that's like not surprising at all. And again, understanding where just different pitchers are, you know, in their careers and in their 2021, you know, just workloads. And Sam was the one, like, I'm ready. Like, I shut it down for, you know, a week or two, and I ramp back up, and this is what I'm doing. This is my plan. This is how I'm getting ready to sign and get going and compete this summer. It's exciting, right? Like, he's ready, and, you know, he's earned everything that's, you know, that's going to be, you know, handed to him. And, you know, it's just, again, it's one of those where it's just a genuine, like, hats off to Sam for putting in the work and just really transforming not only like his career, but his life and the lifestyle that he's choosing to follow as a professional. It's awesome, right? So, you know, it's, again, all the credit in the world to him.
I don't want to go line by line and go through all 20 picks, but I do want to ask you about Kai Bush, yep. Second round pick, big 6'6" left-hander out of St. Mary's. Everything I've read on the guy, I hadn't heard of him before this week. That's your territory. It's not mine. But everything I've read, plus fastball, I mean, the stuff sounds like it's legit. What were some of your impressions of him?
Yeah, different versions, totally different pitcher than Sam, but a lot of the underlying stuff from a makeup, work ethic, competitiveness, really high, you know, character kid. And I think the exciting thing is he is such a unique, different package compared to Sam. And, you know, when you look at him, you know, big lefty up to 96, 97, you know, big stuff, really great changeup. The separator was like, you know, you go and look at like his command, like this is a lot of feel and a really big, big body, and who is just, you know, kind of starting to scratch the surface. And obviously he's a, you know, 3 schools in 3 years, just with, you know, all the COVID stuff that was going on, finally kind of was able to come into his own and really kind of start scratching the surface this year. And I still think there's a lot more to come with him, you know, once he starts his pro career. So really exciting, you know, again, has proven a lot to this point, but still has, you know, another gear that, you know, I think we all believe is going to be in there moving forward.
We got to talk about the 20 pitchers. I mean, obviously, that's a huge number to go 20 for 20, but also 19 college arms. I thought that was pretty surprising. Again, I don't know the background of this, and I know that, and trust what you understand about what's happening across amateur baseball. So for you to kind of go that direction, I would imagine that probably wasn't by design. Maybe it was. Just how did that kind of come to be?
Yeah, again, you know, it's something I – maybe not to this extreme, but something I'd done previously. And I think just the pure depth of pitching, when you're really condensing almost 2 draft classes into 1 this year, you know, there was impact pitching to be had, you know, in the mid rounds and in the late rounds all the way to our last pick that, you know, is just available. And it's pitching comes at a premium. And then, you know, you have just an influx of it really in almost 2 classes this year that you just you grab and you believe in, and you know they do different and unique things that you feel like can translate to professional baseball and ultimately to Anaheim. So in a lot of ways, you know, I think this was it's kind of a dream come true for me, you know, as a former pitcher who loves pitching, to just, you know, again, continue just to fold as many arms as we're going to be able to into the system is really exciting.
Matt, now as far as the 3 days, very different this year, being with the All-Star break, a later class, a later time to do the draft, but a lot of changes as well. New general manager. I'd like to know some of the maybe the differences of what the room was like and how the selection process went about.
Yeah, it's been awesome, and you know Perry's fantastic and gives, you know, myself and Ray Montgomery and our group of scouts just the utmost liberty to just, you know, voice our opinions on players and just have fun and keep it loose in there. And obviously there's some really long days, and, you know, you look back after almost 2 weeks of meetings, and I think everybody's kind of worn, but, you know, to have it come to this, you know, and execute on an awesome draft, like, it's really exciting. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons for optimism moving forward, and, you know, I feel really good about the things we have in place and where we're going.
I know we talked last year in the 2020 draft about the challenge that came with trying to, you know, find players in the COVID era. Now, just 4 draft picks last year, a 20-pick class this year. What were those challenges like for you, just logistically, in getting tape on guys and seeing them? How different was that compared to 2019 and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, and it's still, you know, we're still feeling the effects of it, you know, in our little scouting community, still, you know, throughout the spring and, you know, now into the summer. But, I mean, a few of the pitchers we took, you know, in the higher picks, like, they were very tough to see this year. I mean, we were able to see them and scout them and get to spend time with them and get access, but, you know, certain universities and high schools, you know, scattered around the country, there were challenges in place, you know, of limiting how many scouts can attend and certain weekends that certain groups of teams can attend and not attend. So there was still a lot to work through, that, you know, 2019 earlier that didn't exist. So, you know, I think the one thing it's taught us is to just be flexible and communicate and, just understand, you know, there's going to be restrictions and limitations, and there are things that, you know, we have to, you know, abide by just because, you know, that's the hand we've been dealt, and we have to respect decisions that are made, whether we agree with them or not. So, again, you know, you have to be resourceful and, you know, go and look at film on players and do Zooms with players and call coaches and, you know, people, you know, that, you know, are people of influence for the players and just get as good of a picture of we can if there's blind spots, because that's more than anything, I think last year taught us is uncovering what the blind spots are on players prior to making selections and do everything we can, you know, within reason to make selections in full confidence.
Matt, last thing for me, everyone's going to hear about the top 2 names in particular. Is there another guy that's in this group that might be particularly interesting for Angel fans that maybe jumped out like, oh, wow, this guy in the 8th round, I couldn't believe he fell to us. Was there anybody like that for you in this draft?
So for the sake of being fair to the full group, I'll pick Landon Marceau, who went 3rd. Landon's incredible. I mean, he was a USA pitcher in high school. And to go and anchor a rotation at LSU and the best conference in college baseball, the SEC, he's a special kid. Like, the make, I mean, again, I'm big on makeup and character and competitiveness. Like, this is top of the scale. He is really fun. He's a hyper competitor, and it's going to be one that, you know, I'm going to be really curious to see how quickly he moves, because he can have pretty good and quick impact on our organization. And then circle back on the one high school pitcher we took, Mason Albright. You know, Mason is just a hyper competitor and really just awesome, unique young pitcher with tremendous upside and, you know, just a package of pitches that we believe in. So, you know, it's fun, right? Like, it's fun when you look up and there's so many different, you know, unique, you know, pitchers to compare themselves to.
It should be fun to watch their development, their growth. That's the deal, right? You got to draft and develop. That's how you get a pitching staff. And the Angels go 20 for 20 in the draft this year. Matt, appreciate it. Thanks and congratulations.
Thank you, Trent. Appreciate it.
Really appreciate Matt Swanson for giving us that kind of time and great insight into the Angels room, taking us through the draft process and giving us a little background on these selections the Angels have made here in the 2021 first-year player draft. Speaking of those selections, Sam Bachman and I had a chance to catch up and meet each other, really, for the first time on a Zoom call just the other day. So here now is Angels' first-round pick, Sam Bachman.
Sam, congratulations on your selection. I mean, to be a top 10 pick in Major League Baseball's first-year player draft, remarkable. For you, what was it like hearing your name called and just experiencing draft night?
Yeah, it was definitely surreal, and I think that probably relates to Kai as well. It's just one of those things, like, you think about all the work you put in and, you know, a lot of the sacrifice that you and people around you really made to get you kind of there. And to hear my name was, you know, pretty crazy and a pretty powerful moment, something I'll always remember.
What was draft night like for you? In what ways did you were you able to experience it?
Yeah, so I ended up having it back at school here at Miami University, and you know, that was awesome. They've done a lot to really help me, and so it only felt right to have it there. And I had family, friends, teammates, coaches, a lot of mentors there, and there were about 150, 160 people there, so it was quite the group, and you know, it was awesome to share with them.
Coming from a conference like the one you were in, obviously great success in college, but at the same time, you know, you hear so much about the SEC and conferences like that. So for you to be selected where you were, I think speaks volumes about what you've been able to do. But at the same time, did you ever carry maybe a little chip on your shoulders, maybe not being at one of the power conferences and still being able to have the success you've had?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's really what I have always been. I only had two offers coming out of high school, so I wasn't really a sought after guy. So it really, I love that I had a chip on my shoulder. I always, you know, was underlooked, so it always kept me driven and going. And, you know, just getting recognition now only fuels the fire even more to, you know, be even better.
And on that same call, we also checked in with the Angels' second round pick, Kai Bush.
One thing, Kai, I have heard a ton about your fastball, and everything I read is about that pitch. Can you just maybe describe how the way it comes out of your hand, and also maybe when that started to develop for you as being a plus pitch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm over the top. I'm a high three-quarter guy. I think my release point's like 7 feet around there. It's pretty high. It comes out right on the top. I try and stay behind, get some ride to it. But yeah, fastball's always been one of my better pitches. And then, I mean, until the mechanics kind of got figured out, it was really, I mean, an average pitch, but still my best pitch. And then once the velo ticked up, it really became my best pitch and kind of has a little wiggle to it and movement and kind of hard to see with the high release. It has just a different slot, I guess. But yeah, no, I mean, it's my favorite pitch. I love that thing. The biggest thing for me was getting a glove side. Once I was able to go arm and glove side, it was, I mean, just my best pitch and something that I used probably 65% of the time.
At 6'6", I'd imagine your basketball coach was not wanting you to play much baseball, but here we are here today. Is there anybody that maybe you like to model your game after that maybe you've seen before that's kind of been maybe somebody to look up to that's been in the bigs?
Yeah, I like to look at Blake Snell. There's not much guys that I feel like that are as high of a three-quarter and 6'6", 240. So he's a bigger body, bigger frame, a pretty similar pitch mix. So he's a guy that I like to watch and kind of not mirror, but see kind of how his grips and like what he does. Yeah.
I appreciate that. Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. That's going to just about do it for us here on the Angels Recap Podcast. Big thanks to Matt Swanson and also to Sam Bachman, Kai Bush as well. Very exciting to see what these guys are going to be capable of here in this Angels organization. For Hannah Stang, Howard Drescher, and everybody that helps put this show together, my name is Trent Rush. And most importantly, thanks to all of you for joining us here on the Angels Recap Podcast. We've had some really fun shows over the last couple of weeks. I encourage you to check those out as well. It's all available right here at angels.com/podcast. Okay, coming up for the Angels, starting on Friday, the Halos get set to take on the Seattle Mariners right here at the Big A. If you don't have your tickets yet, of course, you can do that at angels.com/tickets. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for being with us. Here, this has been the Angels Recap Podcast.